Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. We were bastard children of a generation reshaped by a conflict that left a gaping wound in the world. The men who came back from the fields of Europe and the islands of the Pacific gave rise to a new generation of men, more so boys who were completely ill-equipped for this new world, a world that bore scars and damage so deep it affected even the lands that never saw the conflict, an evil unknown by man, except for maybe in the times of Genesis, was unleashed upon the world, spreading itself across the globe and creating ripples of destabilization. Those shockwaves are still felt today. Running, jumping, pull-ups, pointless tasks, getting screamed at, repeat. Day after day, week after week, the monotony of every day felt almost like a messed up 9-to-5 as opposed to basic training. We were all young and dumb, eager to serve our country and fight the evil commie hordes. Constant discipline and structure molds you into an obedient soldier. It teaches you how to think and move like a single unit, how to follow orders as well as improvise when things inevitably change. You learn to fight with your hands, blades, guns, whatever is provided. All that training makes a young man feel invincible. Millions of naive boys have met terrible fates across the ages from this Superman fallacy. Sometimes, even with the training, the stupidity of young adulthood and millennia of humankind learning and studying war, you find yourself in a situation that reduces you to nothing more than small ink letters in the pages of a casualty report, filed away to never be seen again. Of course, the US government does its best to keep that kind of sobering reality locked up tight. That wouldn't make a very good recruitment poster on the wall of a Woolworths. If you spend enough time in the military, you become privy to this reality. Some learn the hard way. Most, however, only get glimpses of it in after-action reports, often too proud or ignorant to even put the pieces together. I, however, have never been a lucky man. I was not fortunate enough to only get a glimpse of that kind of horror as it merely passed through my fingertips on the way to a fax machine. My platoon was a recon platoon stationed in Camp Davies on the Saigon River. Life was pretty good, despite us being in the thick of it in 1966. We didn't have many threats that far south. Just occasional deployments to some random patch of jungle to scout ahead for a larger force. My squad and I spent a lot of our time drilling, reading comic books, and telling stories about women, cars, sports, you know. Quite frequently, when we were really bored or sleep-deprived in the middle of the night, we would start telling ghost stories. Carter, our machine gunner, is a good old Appalachian boy. 6'4", 280 pounds of corn liquor and repressed childhood drama. He always had the most and the best stories. Tales of creatures on two legs, inexplicable sounds in the woods, disappearances, wild people, even Bigfoot. Most of the time, I think he was making them up or embellishing a sick deer encounter. Sometimes, though, I couldn't help but feel like there was an actual air of truth to his ramblings. On one of these nights, all of us huddled in a circle in the middle of the barracks. Carter was in his element, scaring the new guys with a story he'd told 100 times about how his ancestors spoke of a tribe of people deep in the hills. Feral people that hunt hikers and moonshiners, live in caves, and don't have any kind of language other than grunts and screams. His ancestors believed these tribes of people exist everywhere on the globe, even as far as Vietnam. Of course, Carter uses this to try and scare the shit out of the privates fresh from basic, and most of the time it worked. My closest buddy, Bill, was a devout Christian and tended to be the voice of reason to combat Carter in defense of those poor recruits. He may have believed in God, spirits, demons, and a plethora of other supernatural things, but he seemed dead set on disproving all of Carter's tall tales. Bill was in the middle of telling a very annoyed private about how Carter is a godless heathen when our barracks door swung open abruptly. Our lieutenant stood silhouetted in the light of the hallway outside, one hand holding the door open.
John, Bill, Carter, Matthew, Ronald, you have a new assignment, he said sternly.
I looked at Bill, confused. Why did the LT only need our squad? Why was he giving us such short notice in the middle of the night?
Can I finish my story, sir?
Carter asked.
I was just about to get the kid to piss his pants,
he said, smirking and gesturing at a young, freckled kid across from him.
No, you weren't,
the boy retorted, his voice cracking in the process.
Negative. They want you right now. Get your shit and get up,
the lieutenant barked.
They?
You'll find out when you get to the airfield. Now get going, he ordered, shutting the door behind him. Grumbling, we put on our uniforms, grabbed our packs and kits, and headed to the airfield. We were greeted by the LT and a man in plain clothes, looking kind of like a tourist. They stood hunched in front of a blacked-out Huey, engine running and ready to go.
This is your handler for the next few days,
the LT shouted over the whir of the blades.
You'll be taking orders from him, and he'll be taking you where you need to go.
I glanced at the man. Light hair, clean-shaven, aviators, at night. Who does this guy think he is? He met my gaze and simply gestured to the open chopper doors. The five of us piled in and put on the headphones as we watched the man climb in the co-pilot seat. As we were lifting off, Ronnie, our group control freak, broke the air with a question we were all thinking.
Why are we not getting a briefing, and where are we going?
Our handler replied with a voice I didn't expect. You're going to be looking for a team we lost on a search and destroy mission. Details classified. All you need to know is that they reported contact at 0350 yesterday, and we haven't heard back from them since.
We'll drop you off 10 clicks from their last known position. Afterward, you'll trek north until you find the position on the maps that will be provided to you.
A question burned in my mind that I'm sure was shared amongst the group. Why us? We were just a regular army recon team, and this guy reeked at the agency. Did they want someone disposable? I squirmed in my seat, hoping that thought was a simple anxiety-induced exaggeration. The rest of the flight was pretty uneventful, albeit long. The five of us stayed silent, exchanging glances at each other. Carter made lewd gestures to try and break the tension, but he could tell it wasn't working. Our handler gave us the maps. Fairly standard terrain, nothing we couldn't handle. We were going to a hilly location with a river to the north. They'd been kind enough to mark the previous team's path. We'd follow a valley about 5 clicks north until we hit a small mountain. After climbing that, we'd follow the ridgeline east for about a mile until we reached an old landslide. After that, it was a simple hike through the unforgiving jungle until we got within a few hundred yards of the river. That's where they lost contact with the team. Our silence was shattered by the voice of the pilot.
30 seconds out. Get ready.
Bill put his hand on my shoulder and sent up a silent prayer for our team, a ritual that had come to comfort me more than I care to admit. We touched down in a small, burnt-out clearing in the jungle, with one last, "Good luck, boys," from our handler. We hopped out of the Huey and into the dark expanses of never-ending jungle. I knelt at the front of our perimeter, scanning the trees and waiting for my eyes to fully adjust. The sound of the chopper slowly faded away, and I gave a silent hand gesture to move forward. The second we stepped through that tree line, I don't know, there was just a heaviness in the air, like something evil resided there. I think everyone felt it. Even Matt, always one for quick humor, was completely silent, scanning the dense undergrowth. We made it about a mile before we heard rustling to our right. We immediately dropped to a knee and listened. It sounded quick and light, like a rodent or something. It scurried away, on and off, about 30 yards away, probably hunting for bugs or something. Honestly, it was kind of comforting. I cracked a small smile, imagining its little body scampering around the undergrowth in its own giant world. Until I heard a crash, sticks breaking and frantic squeaking before it was abruptly cut off with a flesh-ripping tear. We stayed silent, waiting for the stray dog or big cat to leave. Eventually, we did, but the footsteps sounded weird. They were heavy, like what we expected, but there was something off that I couldn't figure out. After a few minutes, we continued on our path, trudging through the foliage and making sure to watch for traps left by the Viet Cong. We stumbled upon a body right before we hit the mountain. We smelled it before we saw it. The sour, thick smell of death violating our nostrils. It was hanging from its leg, stuck in the crook of a branch about 10 feet up. Getting a closer look, we could tell it was an NVA soldier. His blue uniform ripped and tattered, barely clinging to his rotting flesh.
I thought this other team came through here just yesterday. How the hell is this dude so ripe already?
I don't think the team did, Bill whispered, pointing to deep claw marks on the man's arms and face. Even though he was my enemy, I felt bad for the bastard. Being mauled by a tiger is not exactly the way I'd want to go out. The thing that confused me was that it didn't look like he'd been eaten or anything. Just killed, stashed in the tree, and abandoned. My thoughts were interrupted by Carter placing a grenade in the corpse's mouth.
A pardon gift, in case these rats come back for him, he grinned.
Bill looked particularly disturbed, but kept his mouth shut, clutching his rosary. I about jumped out of my skin when a bird abruptly landed on the branch the corpse was hanging from. We all locked eyes with it, a couple rifles raised. It just watched us, unmoving. It opened its mouth to screech, but nothing came out. A gunshot rippled through the air as the bird exploded in a ball of feathers. I looked over to see Matt was trembling, his finger not even relaxed yet from pulling the trigger, his eyes still locked on the spot on the tree where the bird had been.
There was no blood, no sound, no blood, no sounds, no blood,
he muttered under his breath. He was right. There wasn't even a drop of blood on the tree, just some scattered feathers. I grabbed Matt's rifle barrel and gently lowered it, grabbing his shoulder to ground him.
What do you mean? That thing exploded like a watermelon. It's just dark, man.
Your eyes aren't adjusted from the muzzle flash. I lied, trying to comfort him.
No. No blood. No sound.
He muttered again. I exchanged concerned glances with the rest of the group and grabbed Matt by the shirt.
Snap out of it, Matt. We have people to find. Stop freaking out over a damned bird, I said sternly,
pulling him behind me to continue on. I will admit, I was rattled too. In the moment, I chalked it up to the darkness playing tricks on us and sleep deprivation, the usual excuses. I still had a pit in my stomach as we marched on. We reached the peak of the mountain and started along the ridge line, watching our feet so we didn't slip and break a leg or something. The trees were thinner on the ridge, and it was the first time we'd gotten to see the stars that night. It helped to ease our tensions a little. There was just something about those little flecks of light in the inky black sky that makes you feel at peace. Then, Bill slept. He was probably looking to the stars, praying or distracting himself from our tense reality. Regardless, he hit the ground hard, rapidly sliding down the side of the mountain, screaming in panic, his scream cutting off sharply after a short distance. We shouted his name into the jungle and tried to slowly pick our way down to him. About 50 yards down, we found him, cradled in a nest of tree branches and foliage, almost like he was caught. He was unconscious and somehow seemed unscathed. Ronnie grabbed him and shook him, shouting his name to try to wake him up. He woke up a few moments later, dazed and delirious.
What the hell happened, man?
Matt asked, concerned. Bill stared back at him with a glazed look.
I don't know. Something grabbed my foot, I think.
What? I asked abruptly.
Something grabbed my foot. I got dragged. I didn't fall. I felt it, dude.
Loud crashing sounds came from the jungle below us. The unmistakable sound of a human clumsily running through the undergrowth. We raised our rifles, covering Bill in his concussed stupor. The crashing grew closer and closer until we heard Vietnamese. We immediately opened fire on where we thought it was coming from, emptying our magazines with a mix of fear and defiance to the enemy we were here for in the first place. We ran dry and began to reload, listening for any more movement. A panicked shout came from the bush.
Gop Doa Bin An.
Help. Peace. It was definitely a trap. We all knew it. There was no way we were going into that jungle to find that guy and try to help, just to have him stab us or pull a grenade. We listened to him cry for help for a few minutes, waiting for his buddies to ambush us or for him to die. Our concerns were validated when we heard more movement behind him, slowly approaching his position. We got ready to fire as soon as we could identify who it was, listening intently. The movement got close to the man, before we heard him saying something in a relieved tone, followed by terrified, blood-curdling screaming, thrashing, the sounds of flesh ripping, bones breaking. His screams turned into gurgles and gasps before the commotion stopped. We sat there, too terrified to move or even fire our weapons. We heard what sounded like wood creaking and a body being dragged. And still, we didn't fire. My heart was in my throat, beating with the sound of a Mongol cavalry charge until the movement began to move towards us. Only then did we fire. Again and again, we fired until we ran dry. This time, I can guarantee it was out of fear. Reloading, we listened for any movement and waited. None of us wanted to be the first to recommend what we were all thinking. We needed to identify whatever this thing is. Bill was still dazed and huddled in the middle of our group, his weapon missing from the fall. I looked at Ronnie and Matt.
Stay here. Watch Bill. Find his rifle. Carter, you're with me.
I began carefully making my way towards the man, the thing we shot at. Whatever bit of comfort we had experienced before was completely gone. Our muzzles never stopped moving, scanning, waiting, ready for some creature to jump out at us. We quickly found the thing that killed the man. It wasn't a tiger like we'd hoped. It was the corpse from the tree, lying there on the jungle floor in the same ripped and destroyed blue uniform, but with a distinct lack of rot. He looked fresh, and worst of all, still had the grenade in his mouth. We definitely killed him. He had about 10 bullet holes in him across his whole body. I put a couple in his forehead, just in case.
What the hell's going on here?
Carter asked, staring at the dead NVA, bending down to check him over. I don't know. The only thing I felt confident about that night was that answer. I had no clue what was going on, or if this was even real. It felt like one of those nightmares you wake up sweating and crying from. It couldn't be real. None of this was real. Deep in thought, trying to get a grip on our situation, Carter brought me back.
John, there's no blood. The dude's dry.
He removed his finger from one of the bullet holes. Completely dry. How is this possible? This is a guy. A normal guy. We're fighting a war against his people. We know they bleed. Why doesn't he bleed? Why didn't the bird bleed? How is the grenade still in his mouth? Wait. I bent down to check on the man's mouth and grabbed the grenade to pull it out. Reaching out, I immediately revolted, jerking my hand back and screaming. It was soft and warm, not metal. It wasn't a grenade. It was his mouth. It still looked like a grenade, but there was an opening with teeth and a tongue. I grabbed my bayonet from its sheath and began frantically hacking at the NVA's neck, panic taking over and fueling my frenzied chopping and slicing. Whatever this thing was, I wasn't giving it any chances. Once the head had been completely severed, Carter grabbed me by the scruff of my shirt and hauled me to my feet.
Feel better now? Remind me to not get on your bad side, Wolverine, he joked.
I looked at him, expressionless, letting myself catch my breath.
We need to find that guy we heard screaming. We need to identify him and see if he had any intel on him, I stammered.
No, screw that. We're going back to the group and not messing with whatever messed up juju happened over there.
Conflicted, but kind of relieved for the sanity check, I nodded my head and we made our way back to the rest of our squad. We found Matt and Bill where we left them. Bill was on his feet now, drinking some water. Matt was standing sentry near him, rifle raised at us.
Where's Ronnie?
I asked, confused. Matt looked at me with a concerned expression on his face.
We don't know. He went up the hill to find Bill's rifle and hadn't come back yet. We haven't heard anything since he left.
Damn it,
I muttered. Let's head back up the hill and link up with him on the way to the ridgeline, I ordered.
Can you walk, Bill?
I asked.
Yeah, all good. Just a little sore,
he replied confidently. We started our hike back to the top, quietly whistling and calling for Ronnie. About halfway up, I thought I heard a stifled yell. I jumped and cracked my elbow against a large, lumpy knot on a tree. We sat and listened for a bit, but heard nothing, and continued on to the top. We found Ronnie's helmet hanging from a tree. We didn't even say anything. We knew he was gone, especially since the chin strap had been ripped clean from the helmet. I tried to radio back to base and let them know we had a casualty, but no response. Just dead air. The radio was dead. Matt grabbed his helmet, rested it at the base of the tree, and we stood silent for a moment as Bill sent up a prayer for Ronnie. At the moment, I hoped he at least died quickly. But knowing what I know now, I know that wasn't the case. We finally reached the landslide after about 45 minutes. A quick look showed the paths the previous team had used to get down in the old loose dirt. At the bottom of the slide, we saw a flash of a silhouette, what looked to be a human.
Maybe it's one of the team,
Matt whispered hopefully.
Only one way to find out.
Carter started, hopping on the edge of the slide and beginning a clumsy slide-slash-walk down the hill. We all followed reluctantly. How we could be this gung-ho after what we've seen tonight is beyond me. When we get out of here, you're the one telling Ronnie's family he's gone, Matt said coldly to Bill.
What? Why?
He replied, confused. It was your rifle he went looking for. It's only fair you tell them what happened to him. Not now, Matt, I ordered. He could still be out there. We don't know yet. I lied again.
Yeah, sure,
he mumbled. We all knew I was lying. We continued on. We arrived at the last known position of the team about an hour before sunrise. There was evidence of a firefight. Some grenade craters, blood, trampled plants, but no bodies. In the center of the carnage was a large tree, significantly larger than the ones studying it, like it was claiming all the nutrients from the surrounding area. It was black and scorched from the base to about halfway up. They had clearly set it on fire somehow. Whether it was intentional or not, I only now know.
You think they try to burn someone out?
Bill asked, pointing to a large, hollowed-out portion in the base of the tree, easily big enough to fit a human in.
Maybe. Must not have worked, though. No bones,
Carter stated. He was right. There was no evidence of any remains in the hollow. All there was a large, strange knot and a pile of jelly-like mess. Thick and viscous, deep red in color, and smelled like rotting fruit and gasoline.
Dude, that's gross,
Carter chuckled, bending down to touch the slime.
It's warm, he noted.
Well, duh, the damn tree was on fire. Of course it's warm,
Matt scoffed.
If you'd use your head more than your biceps more often, you'd be able to find...
Matt's mockery was cut off sharply as a shadow lunged from the tree line and slammed him into the ground. He screamed and squirmed as the olive-green-clad figure grabbed him by the face and drug him quickly into the jungle. We whipped to face the way he went and listened to his screams travel into the distance. We expected to hear him ripped to shreds like the others, but we only heard his screaming fade as he was dragged further and further into the dense green expanse. Begging to a god that couldn't hear his screams over his rifle firing wildly into the air.
I pissed my pants. I was completely and totally frozen, my brain scrambling for any reasonable explanation to our unnatural predicament, grasping at any little fragment of training or intel I could find in the recesses of my brain. This isn't real. I'm in a nightmare. I'm being punished. This isn't real. I tried to convince myself.
I started to see more shadows in the trees around us. Dashing between gaps, ducking behind trees, I think I even saw some climbing.
No grunting, no breathing, just footsteps and foliage being brushed aside or broken.
Carter started firing his machine gun into the trees, pointing at anything he saw move, hoping to hit anything at all.
Then, the movement stopped. Suddenly and completely, it stopped.
Carter stopped firing, breathing heavily and staring wildly into the trees. Bill, standing against the tree, shocked and audibly praying for deliverance from this hell. My heart was pounding in my ears. My eyes whipped from tree to tree, looking for any threat possible. My ears listened for any sound. There was nothing. Not a sound. That's the problem. There was absolutely no sound. No barks. No birds. Not even wind. Then it clicked. There never had been. Ever since we landed, I couldn't figure out what felt so off. There were never any normal sounds. Wherever we were, it was dead.
It was dead. And we were about to be too.
Bill went white as he turned his head to look at my left. I turned to the side and my heart dropped. It was Ronnie. Just as we'd left him. But no helmet. He stood there about 20 feet from us, just staring.
Ronnie, you okay?
Carter yelled in both fear and reluctant optimism. Ronnie turned his head to Carter slowly and opened his mouth to speak. But nothing came out. He just silently mimicked Carter with his mouth. I raised my rifle and shot him in the stomach. He didn't even flinch, just maintained eye contact with Carter. A hole in his stomach. Not a drop of blood to be seen. I've never felt more fear in my entire life. The thing that stood in front of me was not natural. It wasn't Ronnie. And it was evil. And it was now surrounded by more. They had emerged from the trees almost in sync. It must have been the lost team. About 8 of them, in uniforms I'd never seen before, but distinctly U.S. Although uniforms were in different states of disrepair, the bullet holes, rips and tears, bloodstains. One man even had a handgun that seemed to take the place of his hand. I locked eyes with a taller man, uniform almost completely scorched. He must have been the one that torched the tree behind us. A valiant last stand by a desperate man in a horrible situation. Something within me felt I would soon become brothers with this man in that aspect. In unison, the horde raised their right arms to point at us and slowly unhinged their jaws. I wished they screamed. I wished they made any sound, but it was silent. They just stood there, trembling and pointing. Ronnie lunged at Carter, knocking his machine gun out of his hand and pinning him to the tree. We didn't even have time to react before Bill and I were tackled to the ground and held down. Heads yanked and craned up to watch Carter wrestling with Ronnie. The burnt man approached the two and grabbed Carter by the throat, effortlessly hauling him off the ground, keeping him pinned to the tree. He raised his hand. Long, unnatural nails, almost like claws, capped the ends of his fingers. He swiftly plunged them into Carter's stomach. He cried out and choked through the man's iron grip, writhing and twisting in an attempt to free himself. The burnt man reached inside the wound and came out with a fistful of Carter's long intestine. We watched in horror as the man wrapped the intestine around Carter's neck and tied it. Ronnie grabbed the other end and started climbing the tree, pulling the intestine out as he went. Carter kicked and thrashed as his executioner quickly disappeared into the branches and the intestinal rope drew taut. The burnt man let go and Carter dropped, suspended by his own insides, a wild, panicked look in his eyes. We watched him die for what felt like hours. I heard Bill vomit before he, as well, was dragged to the tree, screaming. Ronnie jumped back down from the tree, hitting the dirt and making eye contact with me. Carter's body slowly began to be pulled into the branches of the burnt tree, disappearing into the darkness, the only sound being his body scraping against the bark and the squelch of his entrails. In his struggle, Bill managed to grab his bayonet and stab one of his captors. I could see the pride and sense of accomplishment in his eyes. So did Ronnie. He calmly reached over, grabbed Bill's arm, and broke it in one swift, unnaturally strong movement. Ronnie seemed to watch as the pride in Bill's eyes changed to anguish and defeat. The burnt man then grabbed Bill by the face, lifted him up, and impaled him on a branch. He didn't suffer. Maybe by some form of cruel grace of God, the branch went right through his heart. Still, his death, of all of them, impacted me the most. I've always struggled with religion, but Bill's faith was weirdly one of the things that made me feel grounded or protected. Losing him took all my hopes of divine intervention and crushed them beneath the boot of fate. I screamed in defiance, then blacked out. Bill got it the easiest. He's the only one of us that didn't have the time to wallow in the reality of our own demise. He was there. Then he wasn't. I envy him in that aspect. and I hope he is embraced by the god he trusted so heavily in. I regained consciousness and looked back at Bill on the tree. My eyes widened as I watched the branch he was on slowly grow and envelop him like an octopus. It bore through to his brain, burrowing into his body, and completely swallowed him up in a cold, hungry embrace. I no longer felt the pressure on my back, and I realized I couldn't see any of the creatures surrounding me. I was completely alone. I laid there for an eternity, scared to move, waiting for a hand to grab me or claws in my back, preferably even a gunshot to my head. Nothing. Just the scraping, stretching sound of the tree consuming my friend. I sat up, confused, reeling from what I just witnessed, looking around for any sign of the things that just mutilated my team. Again, nothing. All there was the radio. The radio that could have been our savior, could have kept all of this from happening if I hadn't abandoned us in our time of need, falling to the backs of our minds and the horrors we were subjected to because of it. It sat about 5 feet from the base of the tree. I knew it wouldn't work. This place was clearly making sure of that. But I was desperate. I scrambled on my hands and knees and grabbed it. I switched to the emergency frequency and pulled the trigger.
This is Sergeant John Petrell. Broken arrow. Broken arrow.
Dead air. Not even static. I began to weep, the weight of everything that happens tonight finally crashing down all at once. Then, a crack in the distance. I snapped my head to the trees, awaiting my death. But the sound wasn't the same cracks and crashes we'd heard from the jungle before. It was the radio. A flurry of cracks and sputters through static.
Sergeant Petrell, and this Agent Smith, did you find the team?
Asked who I assumed to be our handler.
Confirmed. All KIA. Squad is gone. I'm the only one left. I need immediate evac.
What did you find, Sergeant?
He asked casually. What the hell kind of question is that? I wondered angrily.
The team's dead, sir. I found no survivors.
What did you find, Sergeant?
He repeated coldly. I paused for a while, wondering what to say to that question. What was I supposed to say? They'd never take me seriously. You even hint at ghosts or supernatural or monsters, and you get thrown in the loony bin. How am I supposed to explain the deaths of my team to him, or their families? I mulled over my options and slowly depressed the radio trigger.
I don't know, sir. Unknown enemies. Strength unknown.
There was silence for a minute. I wondered if my response even went through.
Understood. Sending evac. Sit tight.
He said quietly. The tension in my body relaxed. For the first time that night, I felt hope. They were coming for me. I just had to make it until they got here. Once I heard the choppers, everything will be okay. I felt it wrap around my ankle. I knew what it was. I could feel the bark even through my uniform. I felt it wrap around my leg and move up my body. I didn't want to look. I didn't need to. I didn't move. I knew resistance wouldn't get me anywhere. It would just numb the impending dread with adrenaline. As I sat there, accepting my fate, I looked around at the jungle around me in the slowly emerging sunrise. Faces. All the trees had faces. The frozen, agonized faces of past victims absorbed into the trees. I looked toward the burnt tree as it dragged me to my inevitable demise. My eyes looked up to the branch Bill died on, to the still, scared face of Bill, forever immortalized in his own personal, supernatural crypt. I didn't know what it would feel like, but I didn't expect it to be warm and wet. The tree slowly began to swallow my feet into its base. Slowly, inch by inch, it didn't hurt. At least that much is good. I just watched as my lower body was slowly swallowed into the charred bark. I reached my hand out slowly to touch my captor. I don't know why. I think I just wanted to know what my eternity would feel like. Maybe it was a silent plea to the creature devouring me, or a final act of delirium. I'll never know. I'll never have the time to know. All I know is I can hear the Hueys coming. I could hear the young men on their way to a trap laid by a being that knows no malice or compassion or any emotion, for that matter. Only hunger. I knew because it told me. It's in my head, and I am in it. I don't know what the afterlife will be like, or if there will be one. I don't know if I did a good job in this life, or if my family will know the truth. I don't know how many more will be claimed by this evil patch of jungle. All I know is I can feel the sun on my face. I can hear the choppers landing in the distance, and I can see myself leading my team towards them.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big.